This is Eva Cox with the latest episode of More Civil Societies, and we really need them at the moment. I actually headed this the apocalypse because in some ways what seems to be happening at the moment has almost as implications of the apocalypse, of the four horsemen of the apocalypse, because we've been through things like bushfires and floods and famine, and now we have the plague. So it's actually been a fairly difficult couple of weeks with the coronavirus pandemic seriously threatening what I think the whole concept of civil societies is, because fear and distrust are very much manifested by people at the moment. I agree with Julie's program last week that the current growing crises expose our vulnerability both personally and more significantly in terms of the broader effects. The current political and social structure are all involved in the mess and question our future well-being locally, nationally, and now definitely internationally. As I draft this, priorities for some significant players are being outlined on the radio that I've got on behind me. This includes the various football codes pushing hard for government money support because their cash cow games have been cut, the RSL worrying about the cancelling of Anzac Day ceremonies, which is going to make people feel fairly uncomfortable, the stock exchange is falling dramatically, so nest eggs and profits are shrinking. Tourism is tanking for obvious reasons, and other related businesses are calling for money from the government to pay for their losses. Oh dear. There's little coverage, however, of the effect of the virus on our lives, which seems to me to be a bigger mission. Are these corporate priorities those needed for allocating our public resources? Surely not. Government should be directing our resources and energy on the people who are affected by the disease and those who might be under threat, but they don't seem to be. How can our government deal with the multitude of unmet needs amongst the most vulnerable in the community? What we need is a well-funded support system in place that will really allow the reduced interactions that put us at risk and the needed care for those that need our assistance financially and personally. The extraordinary community efforts that informally contributed during the fires and us show our capacity to care for others in need, and now there's also the need and resourcing and information to make it work under a disease for the isolated, the needy, and those that are vulnerable, and this doesn't seem to be being discussed at all. Human societies operate very much on relationships. They're built on our interdependence and social connections. So if we're going to deal with something as scary as this particular epidemic, pandemic, whatever we want to call it, we need a fair distribution of the basics that most people need to stay well and get well. We also need good medical and nursing care if we are ill. And we don't really need to support the economic well-being of companies unless that directly affects the people. Yet, as I write this, there's a discussion on here what to do if these resources are not there. Do those in power have the right to decide who will get the care? And this is based on some of the overseas stuff. Should it be on the basis of their age and other health status? Surely eligibility should be our medical needs, not our ages or other categories. These dilemmas come from the fact that we have inadequate health resourcing, and that's where the public spending should be prioritised. But this is not obvious in the proposed packages. The economy is failing to function and our overdependence on the market and profit-making are the drivers of well-being, and it's threatened. The complexity of the global markets are actually being questioned as our dependence on exports, imports and international sales are all not working very well. The magic market algorithms that have been used to direct and govern decisions are now seriously flawed. They're just not working. So climate change, bushfires, floods and now plagues have not been factored into public spending calculations, even though there's been warnings. And now they must be, not just supporting business with tax cuts and investment deductions. And then we need to think about the trust deficit, which I've talked about before. Distrust of those in power here and internationally is at a low ebb. The trust deficit is growing, shown a multitude of services, like the ANU election survey that showed local rising distrust in politicians has risen rapidly from 63 to 76 from one election to the other. And another question found 56% of people think the federal government is run for a few big interests, and only half think politicians know what people think. Not a good look for trusting those in power to get us out of the current mess. The goodwill of communities has been admirable, but further evidence of poor governance may well undermine that too. The effects of isolation and other socially responsible behaviour really depend on us trusting government and their goodwill, not on the punitive authoritarian controls that they're threatening that would divide us. Governments need to recognise it's odds on that most voters are willing to comply with self-isolating quarantine if they believe those in power are seriously addressing their social and personal health needs, as well as the political effects of it all on others. We really need to trust government if things are going to work, if we're going to actually try our best to make this particular plague, this particular disease, minimally affecting us as much as possible. For that, we need reliable implementation of trusted projects. Optimism and trust are really needed if we're going to create or recreate the civil societies, and we need the government and community actions to be built on the trust so that we can rebuild what really matters. And unfortunately, so far, we have a few gaps in the system. Good luck.